Hi, everybody. If you like quality stuff like FilmSack, you can support the Frog Pants Network by going to patreon.com/frogpants today.
Don't you think you should have called or not first or something?
Phone's disconnected.
I know that, Rabbit. Got to get down to the phone place tomorrow. I've been busy, you know.
Don't be talking about my mom or my effing car. I hear everything.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, episode 364. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian MC Cheddar Dunaway.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thanks for that. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, my name is Brian, but my friends call me the Reluctant Rhyme Slayer. Well, they never called me that before tonight, but on the drive over here, I heard it a lot. I guess I should have probably known something was up. Hey, thanks for signing me up for this, guys. No, by the way, nothing like karaoke. Boo. Nothing. Boo. All right, so I guess can I get
Boo.
A beat?
Boo. Oh, you want a beat?
Yo, no, DJ, spin that shit.
DJ, spin that junk. All right, thanks. All right. Yeah, that's dope. Yo, yeah. MTV Raps.
Yeah.
Oh, before I start, I would like to thank my opponent here for going first and for his many honest words. While they were very hateful, I find I have a great opportunity to take those observations and make some real changes in my life. First thing Monday, I'm going on a diet and getting some clothes that fit. Woo, all right. Also, can I just say you really took that spitting rhymes thing to heart. I mean, I've never been that close to an actual rap, and I was not aware of how much saliva was involved. Look at me, I'm dripping over here. All right, so let's get this over with. What's that? Oh, time's up. Oh, thank God.
This is a really good rap battle. Well done. It's almost like you just puked and then came out and did it. Well done. Also with us, Randy, your car is like a giant boat, Jordan.
Yo, check this out. I eat up all y'all little punk podcasters telling me I'm the FilmSack greeting master. That ain't true. That title goes to a guy named Brian. But if I told you I knew which one, I'd be lying. They both be trying to be satisfying. While I'm just over here disqualifying. With every word I say, you just think poser. But that's how I do. I'm a lifelong composer of words and phrases coming like a bulldozer. I expose a brown noser. I'm a trope discloser. And I'll see you at the end with a dumb tweet closer.
Nice. There you
wow.
go. That's,
wow. Did you write that on the bus? That's pretty good.
Yeah. All different directions, up
you
and
should,
down.
Yeah, you should see the paper. I can't keep it straight. Yeah, it's turning it sideways and everything.
It's really bad. With us, finally.
Look how poor I am. I came to afford paper. Look how poor.
Yeah, look at it. You ever seen paper? All right. Finally, Brian, meet him in the shelter, Ibbot.
Ooh, I like that. All right, here we go. Let's finish this out strong.
All right.
Here we go. This morning we're talking about 8 Mile for FilmSack, and I'm on the attack. I don't think Eminem is whack, but I'm afraid I just couldn't keep track of the journey of Rabbit's path. Maybe I'm just mad because it's just my luck. The barista at Starbucks, oh shucks, used real milk instead of soy, which don't bring joy to the lactose intolerance of this boy. Anyway, about the movie, it didn't move me. I didn't think it was groovy, except for the rap battle parts. Those had a lot of heart, but I better save it for the show. So quit acting like a hoe and let me drink my Joe. So let's go and smile, because for the next little while, we'll be talking about 8 Mile.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah!
Woo! Wow. Now that was honest. That's how a white guy raps.
Yeah.
That was
nice. It really was. Nice.
I like it.
I love that. That was great. We are talking about the film 8 Mile. Y'all outdid yourselves, every one of you, for your intros. Let's see if Scott Fletcher can do more.
8 Mile. A young rapper struggling with every aspect of his life wants to make it big, but his friends and foes make the odyssey of rap harder than it may seem.
Oh, okay. Well, all right then. Very straightforward and to the point.
But that summary is missing the most important thing you need to know about the movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Brittany Murphy's calves.
Which is?
Is that the part?
Hold on a second.
If you know nothing about the movie, if you know nothing about it, and you hear that description, you do not realize it's a white guy in a completely black world.
Mm. Oh, yeah, big time. I mean,
like the most important thing about the movie.
Yeah, when I was. Okay, so I thought I'd seen it. I hadn't seen it. I thought I did. Okay. I guess I saw enough of it that I saw.
You saw Straight Outta Compton, right?
I did see that, and I really liked that. But
so close.
That was recent.
Have you seen Hustle and Flow, Scott?
No, never saw Hustle and Flow. Although I meant to, because that was like the original Tony Stark friend was that guy, and he was supposed to be really good
Empire,
in that.
Right?
Yeah, now he's Empire. Right. And that Empire show is terrible, by the way. Anyway, the point is, I thought I'd seen it, hadn't seen it. My recollection, though, of the time and when the movie came out and it got all its accolades and everything was that it was a biopic. Like, it was a straight-up, hey, this was Eminem growing up. I didn't know he was called Jimmy and White Rabbit and all this stuff.
Bunny Rabbit.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that stuff or that this was a fictitious tale with some, you know, it's in Detroit where he grew up and there's some stuff about his mom and all that.
I would say 30% based on Eminem's...
Sure.
The story of Eminem, but yeah, about 70% probably not.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
Which part is Kim Basinger?
She's
part of the real.
Is that 30% of the truth?
His mom's was rough. Yeah, his mom was a rough piece of business. And I don't know
his
how
mom
much
was Vicky Vale. Was that what?
I don't know if Brittany Murphy is supposed to be based entirely on Kim Mathers, his wife, now ex wife. I don't think they're together again, are they? Or maybe they are.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That was on and off again, but. So again, how much of this is rooted in reality, I don't really know. But I guess I'm going to say that I came away kind of really liking it. I was surprised how much I liked it. I didn't think I was going to. I don't know if that was because a few of my friends, Brian Ebbett included, seemed to be really down on it. So my expectations were really low. But maybe it was because, I don't know, I like a good, you know, like the Walk the Line I really liked. And I like stuff like that. Sure. I like, you know, movies about musicians. I like that sort of thing. I like it about sports people, too. It's like kind of a weird side movie genre I get into. And even though this wasn't directly about Eminem's life, it felt real enough. And he's such a weird egg. Like, that guy, you know, came out of nowhere at a time when rap, especially rap with an edge to it, was 100% something you would find from black rappers. That's just the way it was. And if a white guy stepped in, you'd go, all right, well, you're either Vanilla Ice or you're terrible. So get out of here. But somehow Eminem transcends that and brings real cred to this stage.
Now,
to the
before we get emails, we know about the Beastie Boys. We know about
We know.
But,
yeah.
Sure.
We know about Snow.
Like the, come on.
I think the fact about him that people don't know that's the most impressive is that for the decade of the 2000s, the aughts, the noughts, whatever you call that decade, he is the highest selling musical artist in the United States.
Right.
Like, that's incredible.
Right.
Mm. Wow. Right.
And I wouldn't mind getting we have black listeners. I'd love your perspective on kind of the culture of gangster rap and that kind of level of rap at the time. And why Eminem was accepted. He worked with Dre.
Do you think that our black listeners are listening to gangster rap?
Well, I'm not. You know what I'm saying.
I don't want to
appropriate the culture and say, I'm Mr. Rap expert. I'm not. I know what I like. I like NWA. I like Ice Cube. I like Dre. I like a lot of West Coast stuff. I like some Biggie. Like, I like rap music, but I'm not, you know, I can't stand there and go, this represents my culture, upbringing, and the words that they say really speak to me. It doesn't work that way. Somehow, Eminem seems to be the real deal.
Right.
It was also that he injected some comedy into it. I mean, the first thing that a lot of us heard from him was the Hi, My Name Is.
The track. Slim Shady deal.
And there was so many pop culture references, and it was so funny and so... I mean, it was edgy. It was, you know, it was blue.
Yeah.
I'm just trying, you know, I'm going to be as white as possible.
Right.
Sure. Whatever.
Very blue rapper.
B, be yourself. I mean, just be.
Yeah. Exactly. But sure. It was basically, it was borderline novelty song without being a novelty song, because it right. was humorous. It was kind of making fun of the genre in which it was firmly rooted, but also not, also being very true to that.
Sure. He's very self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very self-deprecating. That's what helps a lot.
Well, and the movie's tendency towards some sort of racism all gets hung on this one thing where at the very end he completely does his opponent's job for him. Like he completely dislocates his opponent's weaponry by right. being self-deprecating. And right. without that, you're going to come away from this movie going, wow, this is all kind of racist and uncomfortable. And instead, he manages to be just a whipping boy for the whole film.
Yep.
If you read a biography of Eminem, it's not quite so like this, but but he makes this character into somebody who gets literally curb stomped, like in front of a right. little girl, yeah. you know, and it's a serious movie. It's hard to believe how serious this movie is.
Sure.
And it's a good idea too, the way they wrote the script and the way they sold it, because what you're doing is you're selling to your audience. Your audience are moviegoers, people who are seriously, you know, in gangs and every day hangs in the balance of whatever it is that you're going through. They probably wouldn't be the type to go see 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Because they probably don't have the opportunity. Whereas, you know, me, you, a lot of people are able to go to movies. We can afford that lifestyle. And it spoke to us because we all get the just trying to do a little better for yourself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we all get trying to get out of whatever it is.
You know, bad situation or whatever. We're stuck in
one place. Yeah. We want a little bit better.
Sure. You got Kim Basinger being the worst mom ever. You got freaking Michael Shannon, by the way, who's 2 years younger than Eminem in real life.
Weird.
Yeah, wasn't that fun? Yeah,
so weird. I loved it. Weird to me. But he was a real douche. And, you know, that little girl, I just felt so bad for. Like, it really captured that stuff in a way that felt honest. It didn't feel contrived or like they were trying to force me into, you know, oh, look at the thing people have to deal with. And his only way out is his mad rhymes or whatever. It didn't feel like I was being forced down a path like that. It just felt like they were being honest about what life can be like for people of all colors and races and backgrounds, and having him in a place that is predominantly black, and he being this white kid who's, you know, in that culture trying to figure his way out in there, is an interesting angle that could have gone so wrong. Like it could have just been like, okay,
yeah,
guys.
I honestly didn't think they played up the racism as much as they could have. I mean, I think if you had a young black rapper in that first rap battle where he chokes, you'd see a lot of the same path. You'd see a lot of the same journey that Bunny Rabbit went on with this other character. Right. It's just a matter of like, oh, he got up there last time he choked. He doesn't have the chops. He doesn't belong up there. And I think that's not so much just a black versus white thing. It's an experienced rap battler versus a non-experienced rap battler.
Sure.
Isn't that the scary? I mean, because really you would think life and death would be like, you would think the scariest part of any of these type of movies, but really the scariest part is getting on the stage yeah. and failing. I mean, really, that's one of our top fears, right? Because a lot of people say, I would rather die.
I'll tell you what my top fear was getting
speaking is higher than death.
Mine was getting a big rusty chunk of scrap metal up my A while I'm trying to get it on with my girlfriend in the warehouse.
All right. Well, can we cover this then really quickly?
Oh, yeah.
What gross got out the most?
Yeah.
Let's get on Brittany Murphy for a minute, like Eminem did.
I like Brittany Murphy a lot, by the way. I think it's a crime that she passed away and that her husband or boyfriend, whoever it was.
It wasn't
away.
A crime.
It wasn't a crime.
I don't know if I'm gonna call it the most, but I'm hoping Scott was with me in being grossed out when they were flinging gasoline all over the inside of an abandoned house and getting it on each other. I was just like, stop, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is the second week in a row we've seen people flinging gas on each other. Just, gas is fun, gas is a toy.
It's too much. And what they were doing with that was too much. But the gross moment for me.
Is it the hand lick?
No, but that's gross.
Yeah.
Was it through the entire time? Like, we don't see her wash her hands before she walks into the.
No, there's nothing. There's no nothing hygienic about anybody in this scenario. They're all grossing me out every second of the minute of the day. Like, that's no question. The hand lick was gross, and also it was way too drawn out, the hand lick, I mean. Specifically, mm-hmm. just that, just mm-hmm. the, like she was like Jabba the Hutt holding Leia too close. It was just, it was gross. And then, you know, their whole time in there, fine, whatever. It fits the movie. Who cares? My grossest.
Worst sex faces ever.
Yeah, they were pretty bad. Worst moment for me is I'm Eminem and I just Ralphed. And now I'm going to get on that mic that everybody's been spitting on and horking on.
Yeah.
I just can't.
It should be fun feeling bad for the person after Eminem who has to, why does this microphone smell like puke?
And he's holding it right up to his teeth, right up to his mouth going, yo. And I'm thinking, get out of there. Go get a mint.
That has always been a bother for me, whether it's in rock videos or whatever, you name it. And if there's two people that are really close to each other with microphones, I don't like it. I just don't like, you're breathing. Because when you sing and you're really forcing that air out and spit and everything, and you're right next to those faces, and it's like, and they were really capturing that spit coming out of Little Tick.
What's his name? Who was the guy that finally got beat? It was Marvel
Papa
guy.
Doc.
Yeah, but he's Anthony Mackie. Yeah, he's a Marvel guy. I made a bad joke on Twitter and some people got after me for it. But I said, hey, you guys, look, it's Black Panther is in this movie.
I knew it was Falcon,
God, but I thought it would be a little funny, just a little funny, and nobody thought it was funny.
But people can't hear your voice going, hey, everybody. They think, oh, hey, everybody, Black Panther's in this.
Yeah, I feel like Twitter is the place to find out that there are always people who think you are stupid.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. It's current domain for Twitter.
As a whole, really. I mean, everything from YouTube comments to Facebook posts.
So I want to, before we go any farther, I really want to know about everybody's like background here. I'm a old school hip hop fan. I've been listening to hip hop since I was a little kid. It was that big escape thing where, for whatever reason, it was on a particular radio station that my radio could pick up, and I would listen to it very quietly where my parents couldn't hear and so on. And I, you know, so I started in like the 80s listening to Public Enemy and Run DMC and Slick Rick. And then as I started getting we would copy cassettes with my friends, it got really hardcore. And I found myself spending years listening to like NWA and 2 Live Crew and Ghetto Boys.
And see, you think you're alone, but there was so many white kids, boys especially, that listened to all of this, and we all did. I mean, Scott, I think Scott
I loved it
before. I definitely did.
I like, I mean, we a all cool Mo D, freaking group. Cool Mo D and the whatever his group was called. And then you got the Run DMC was great. And then who are the guys that talked about the chicken tastes like wood? Who are they?
My God,
I love that song. Oh my gosh, I can't think of the Sugar Hill Gang. All that there kind of go. Stuff is so good. And I loved it all the way up through. And then I was listening to this, like the harder stuff, except I didn't really get into who are the ones that always had naked butts on the front of it. 2 Live Crew didn't like that.
2 Live Crew. Everything was 2 Live Crew.
Always had naked butts.
I had to get out of rap. I used to love singing along. And then somewhere, I don't know if it was about the 2000s, every rap song had to use the N-word at least 20 times.
Yeah.
And so now I can't ride in a car and blast it. It just doesn't happen. Well, I can't do it.
But also, I mean, like, this has been studied and analyzed a ton, so I don't want to get too far into it here, but that was a defensive mechanism of a culture.
Sure.
And it was a culture that was specifically pushing back against invasion from people like Eminem. Right. And there's a great podcast, by the way, I want you to listen to. If you like, seriously, as soon as possible, listen to the Radio Lab episode. Back. There's a Radio Lab episode called Straight Outta Chevy Chase.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah, I heard this. It's really good.
It is absolutely fantastic explanation of what happens when a guy like me goes beyond that barrier. Like, I listened to all this hip hop and I just kept it a secret basically as a kid, but there's a guy that they follow who, he's a white kid in Chevy Chase who decides he's going to get into the scene, and not necessarily as a rapper but as a DJ, and
it's fascinating.
It's really, really interesting. And this film brought up a bunch of that stuff for me, because I feel like the art is accessible to everybody, but being the artist maybe isn't. Maybe isn't accessible to anybody who doesn't fit the culture.
Right.
So are we listening to what Bono said in the last couple of weeks? Wasn't he the one who brought up and said that there needs to be more angry music for white kids to or something. Like, I'm really making it really sound bad. It's not really as that bad, but it's pretty bad. What
well,
he said.
What he means is, I can understand that because Bono and U2, they were all about, you know, social change,
yeah,
and
early things were, yeah, right.
Sure. Sunday Bloody Sunday is a good example. Like, that whole era for them was about, you know, Irish uprising and you know, respect and blah, down with the man and all that. I mean, in a way, it's a very similar story. It's almost the same story. It's just told from a very different part of the world. So I totally get what he's saying. I don't know that I'd argue. I mean, here's the problem. This stuff speaks to power, right? And right. That's the point of it. That's where its art is derived, and that's where it's best expressed. Well, saying that white people don't have enough angry avenues for their music is weird, because right. We're in power, so we're not who we speaking to. So right. A bunch of fake crap we hear, you know, idiots say, maybe, but that's it.
And this movie is frustrating because it's about Eminem before he had any power, before he had a bunch of wealth and became one of the wealthiest artists of all time.
Right.
And that's frustrating because it's like he's depicting a guy who is, like I say, literally being curb stomped by the culture that he's invading. But he's really down and out. Like, this guy has nothing and can only offer this really limited skill. So it's really hard because I want to just say he's also the bad guy. But the movie doesn't let me do that. And I'm like, damn it.
Well, we've interesting in mind. We don't know the trajectory of Bunny Rabbit's success or not.
That's like, true.
Right.
Yeah, they leave it. They leave it in the open. There's a piece of trivia that I need to know is true or not, but I'm going to read it to you guys about this very thing. Mm-hmm. 8 Mile, which came out in 2002, was originally considered to have an unofficial follow-up movie that they were going to call Southpaw. And the idea was that Eminem was going to reprise his role now as a down-on-his-luck, lightweight, left-handed boxer trying to regain custody of his daughter. So rap didn't work out, became a boxer and a fighter. The script eventually evolved, and that idea was scrapped. However, the film was eventually made and was released in 2015 with Jake Gyllenhaal starring in the lead role, with Eminem producing the soundtrack. So that was, it sounds like a real thing, and that is crazy to me. Isn't that crazy?
But it feels like, oh, we have this story about a boxer. Oh, how about we make it the continuing story of this character?
Yeah.
And it was like, almost, that's what this film felt like, almost like a boxer movie, right? It was the whole
almost,
idea.
But there was no other real indication that there was any boxing, other than the fights that he'd get in, but there was no other indication that Bunny Rabbit had any desire or ability to be a boxer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a weird way to take the story of that character.
It really is. Yeah.
Like this
movie.
Well,
but he's always fighting in this movie. He's like, every time he turns around, he's fighting somebody.
It's true, but badly, poorly.
He does a lot of running up to people, and it's usually the people around him that do the fighting. I mean, he throws a couple punches, but he's like, you know, he stomps forward towards somebody, and then it's kind of his entourage.
Right. So it probably would have, I wonder if that was a creative decision, because you don't want, okay, so we're already talking about a guy who's encroaching upon a culture, and then we have most of the people he's encountering are black people. Would it be bad if he's beating up ruthlessly black people, as opposed to beating up mom's boyfriend, Michael Shannon, who has a face that wants to be punched?
That's a good point. Like, the movie gives him a white guy to beat up on, and then pretty much, except for the very last rap battle, he is the victim, throughout the whole film.
Right.
I just, like, you can't reverse anything. Like, it's very particular, every little thing, where your brain tries to go, what if he was black and they were white? No, that doesn't work. What if, like, it just doesn't, like, the moron, you know how every gang of youngsters has a moron? The moron is white, right? Like, he has to be. And you just know, like, when you think about structuring this film, you just know, well, of course, the guy who shoots himself has to be white. That's the only.
I love Cheddar Bob, though. What is about that character that's in so many movies that is lovable, but you're like, oh, son of a.
Then you worry about him, and you're pretty sure he's going to die. And he's a little bit of a chick in the bucket in this movie, in my opinion. Like, I know he's at the end there, but his arc ends sort of. Once Eminem shows, like, hey, I like you, and don't worry about everyone else treating you bad. I think you're cool. And that was the end of it. But Evan Jones, who plays Cheddar Bob, his IMDb photo is the happiest IMDb photo ever taken.
It really is,
he was so lovable, though.
Look at that
guy.
Even
if he shoot himself in the penis.
Yeah. Is that where he shot himself? I don't know.
That was in the thigh.
Oh.
When you see a shot of his pants, it looks like he shot himself in the thigh.
Yeah, and they said they hit an artery, which... I assume wasn't a euphemism for his wiener. Yeah. Here's some other interesting trivia for this movie.
He didn't hit his main vein.
It's the first film ever to have a rap hip hop song in the Academy Awards category for best song, and it won. Nothing's happened since or before.
We all loved that song, right? We was all big into that song.
Oh, it was really good. Yeah.
Except so many variations in this movie.
I like that. Yeah. Supposedly the paper he's writing on in the bus is the actual stuff he wrote the song on, and that thing sold at auction for $10,000.
Wow. Which means that he actually does write like that, where it's like, let's see. All right, I'm going to turn the paper this way and write this next one over here. Because, when the paper is blank and you start that first one, there's all that room on the paper for your other stuff you're writing, and now all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm gonna just, completely turn the paper this
way.
Got
all this space and so little rhymes.
Yep.
It's gonna be horrible.
This is how I think he's legit. Eminem was unable to accept this Academy Award in person. He felt sure some other nominee would win, so he didn't even bother attending. Instead, he was sleeping while his daughter watched cartoons the night he won. Now, I don't know if it's true, but if that's real, there's something real about that.
That's a reminder that he is not an actor. He is not a part of Hollywood. Right. You could really tell if you were paying attention that he is not an actor, because this movie takes such great lengths to keep you from seeing words coming out of his mouth. It is amazing, except when he's rapping, how often he is delivering lines and the camera is showing you someone else's face or the back of Eminem's head or something like that. It is amazing. After a while, I was just like, why is this movie hiding Eminem speaking from me? And every now and then they'd get a really good take. And I was like, oh, he's talking. I can see his mouth moving.
That being said, though, I thought he was pretty good when he needed to be, when he had to fight with mom or fight with Greg or, be sweet with the sister and all that stuff. I bought it. None of that ever felt forced and weird to me.
Give a lot of credit to Curtis Hanson, because he did that thing they do with kids, obviously, where they put together a good take by doing it over and over and then using some tricks.
Doing a lot of cuts to other perspectives and stuff.
That was the follow-up movie I want to see. I want to see what happens to her, because she's going to be messed up, right?
To Brittany Murphy.
The girl. Yeah, so Lily. No.
No. Oh, Lily, right? Sister, yeah.
Yeah. What's her name, Lily?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And oh my gosh, all the stuff that she saw and all the stuff she had to put up with.
And this happens, man. Like if you talk to people, like my sister, she counsels specifically people who've been in abusive homes or have seen these sorts of things. And you don't just suddenly go, oh, we've got you out finally. Here's a new place for you to be. And all is well. It never works that way. Like you carry those scars your whole life. And I don't know, this movie was pretty unafraid to show that, but also it didn't feel exploitative. Like I don't know. I say props to the filmmakers in this case, because it didn't. Mm-hmm. None of that stuff, all of that stuff, could have been really hard and poorly done, and they didn't do it poorly.
No.
Right.
So yeah, no. My issues with the film. I mean, I really liked Eminem's performance. I think the rap battle scenes are fantastic, and if it was a whole movie of those, I probably would have liked the whole thing a lot better.
Really?
But
I'm glad they were as light as they were. I think it starts to fall apart after a short
time. It's like, this movie borrows from Rocky so much, and you need to have as few boxing matches as possible in a Rocky movie.
Sure, but I get your point, but keep going, Abe. I want to hear keep going.
Sure. Like what, so the issues I have, number one, it's a joyless film. I mean, I almost opened my, hey, remember that really funny part because there wasn't one. Like anything remotely resembling, even the part that you'd probably say, when they're chatting outside the Roach Coach, the catering truck, it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, but the main character's broke, he can't afford food, and the other character he's kind of picking on can't afford food, and everybody just looks depressed and sad because they're stuck.
By the way, I love Exhibit, by the way.
That's where I defend the film. The film does a really good job of mixing up the despair of the entire community with the human spirit. Like, these people are doing this joyful rapping in the Roach Coach line, I think that's actually really cool.
Sure.
You didn't enjoy the Sweet Home Alabama remix they did?
That was kind of funny too, but still, again, half of those lines are, living with my mom and can't afford, she's better than this guy went to school with us and she's having sex with him. And and then there's the, probably the biggest part of it is that and I'm rooting for Eminem, of course. I want him to kind of get free from this crap life and the crap family situation and all that. But there's no, for a hero's journey, there's no turning point. He does what he does, and he just keeps on doing what he does. And it's not like he makes a decision part of the way through. It's not like something happens to him that changes the trajectory as much as stuff happens around him and he just reacts to it. The eviction, the fight with Michael Shannon, he gets more hours at the plant. All these things. It's not like there's a moment where it's like, oh, okay, I've really got to put up or shut up, or I've really got to. Right.
Well, see, this is what I think. I totally get where you're coming from, and I think I agree with you that that is the movie. I think why I liked it is for the same reason, because I feel like I'm not being told a load of poop here.
You don't need that. Right.
Well, I mean, I get that in every movie ever made. So for me, once in a while, you'll get a movie like The Color Purple's like this. There's others like this, but where nobody's winning anything. And the most triumphant moment is him dropping his nervousness and his inability to perform in front of all those people and then just laying waste to a couple of rappers. And when he walks away, there is a look of triumph and potential forward momentum in his face, but you don't really know, because he's just got to go home to the trailer park again and he's got to like live this life. And that is real. Like, that's people. And for me, I need to see that sometimes. Like, I need to be reminded sometimes. And when it's done right or well, I always feel like I'm a little better for it, or I have a greater understanding of what people may deal with. But you're right in that, like, the typical template is not there for sure.
And I don't necessarily need the, like, here's the big change and the thing happens. But I mean, I guess a little bit to show you that the character is growing from this. And the rap battle is the turning point. I mean, is as much of a turning point as you get. Is what he's really good at. I mean, is the thing that makes him unique, is he just the only one who can listen to what the first person raps and turn it around?
It has to think for like 10 seconds. It's like, oh, I'm going to think.
And then reflect on it. Yeah.
Where's my sheet of paper at? I'm really good.
Just say yo a couple of times, way too close on the mic.
Superhero power is that he can listen to the first person in the rap battle and use some of the stuff that they said back at them.
Yeah.
It kind of was. And, you know, I think the real... one of the things that felt like it really addressed the idea of the culture of rap, and you hear it all the time in the rap songs, talking about having to sometimes some crews make it all the way to the top together, and some of them kind of have to split up. And it's kind of like Eminem has to make that decision to finally go on his own.
Oh, he has to have that decision beaten into him. Like, he finally lets go and becomes like his own rapper in this film when he finds his girlfriend sleeping with his best friend, pushes him around, and then goes home and gets beat up. Like, that's where it's like that the culture that has been resisting him has finally evicted him completely, and he's gonna find the courage or whatever to do what he knows he can do.
Sure.
But like, it's like you say, Brian, it's so depressing that, you know, that you get to the end and you're just like, okay, that should have been more triumphant. Mm-hmm. And it's actually like, yeah, they have a crowd screaming and cheering, but I don't feel like I'm part of that crowd.
Well, it's because in a real life way, it's not that triumphant. It's hollow and it's empty.
He has to go back to work because the gay guy saved his.
Yeah, it's like it's like somebody having a viral tweet. It's amazing for 5 minutes.
Oh man, I was so riding along with the story on that one. I was trying to predict. I'm like, oh, he's gonna get so fired. Yeah. Oh, he's gonna get fired. Yeah, he's gonna come back and he's always screwed up. He finally got a chance and he screwed it up.
I kept waiting for him to go.
Can you cover my shift for 2 hours?
Yeah. right.
I kept expecting him to do the whole 3-2-1 and then mistime it, and then some other employee's arm was gonna get ripped off. Oh yeah,
I can't wait on that too. Up. Yeah. Down. Up, down.
Oh, you know what, guys? We've just seen too many movies. Like, well, like this is why we talk about tropes too, because like, and this film has a bunch of them, but like we were all waiting for the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it in so many movies.
Yeah. And I was ready for that to happen. It never happened. I'm glad for everyone involved, but yes, I mean, I think everything Ibbot says is right. For some reason that rang well for me at this time. And I could see I have definitely have movies like this where I'm like, ugh, I can't do that again. Yeah. Like, that's just joy. Like you said, joyless is
often not. Hey, I'll say this. I liked it more than The Void. I liked it more than the first time I watched it. I sat through the whole thing this time. And I.
Well, I love that your comparison is I liked it more than The Void. That's amazing.
Well, you guys, you guys all like The Void a lot more than I do.
Yeah. I found 8 Mile to be, I watched it before. And I remember thinking, he's just so angry, and it's just, I'm so sick of his bad attitude. And this time I felt, I don't know, for some reason I felt like there was hope there. I don't know what I was seeing this time that I didn't see it before, but I felt like if maybe there's not much joy, at least there's like hope, maybe some hope in there.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem as hopeless.
I saw that more this time than I did the previous time as well. So that's
right.
That's a good
point. Eminem says, or not Eminem, Brittany Murphy says, or admitted in an interview with David Letterman in 1993 on air on The Late Show, that she and Eminem became romantically involved during production. There was also a rumor floating around that him and the mom but
yeah. When was this? Because 2003.
I'm sorry, 2003. They wrote 93 because it's a reference to when the show, when Late Show started.
I see.
My bad. Yeah. So it would have been like right around the time the movie came out. But so she admits that they were totally getting on. There was rumors floating around that him and Kim Basinger were also getting it on, but neither would ever admit to it. Everyone loves Eminem. They all need a piece of the Eminem.
There's a little bit of Oedipus stuff. Okay, look, I didn't understand, and I still don't get what's up with the calves. But that's what we didn't look at booties in this movie. Every time the guys were excited, they were like looking at the between the thigh and somewhere between the ankle. His mom did it. So did Brittany Murphy. It was so that was the trigger for them. It was just
sure.
You got an explanation? Andy?
I like.
No,
calves.
I felt like
nice.
There was a lot of in this movie. There was a lot more than usual camera pointing down, and there was some kind of artistic theme there being put on display that when you walk along, you keep your eyes on the ground. You don't look around. You don't challenge people. And it felt like the camera was always a little higher than it usually would be and pointed down a little more than it usually would be. Mm. It just that there was I can't prove it. I looked around to see was there some sort of like statement by Hansen that this was the case. But it just felt to me very much like you never like go higher. Usually movies like this have lots of shots of cleavage and men with broad shoulders with no shirts on and this kind of thing. And there was none of that in this movie.
Yeah. Right. By the way, Curtis Hanson, you keep referring to the director, known also for movies like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, which I'll always remember as John DeLancey doing a nasty thing with his hand. And then there's L.A. Confidential, which everybody loves. Also with Kim Basinger.
I don't remember what John DeLancey did with his crusty hands. You don't have to tell me, but I remember that movie just for Rebecca De Mornay and the kitchen scene, the fridge scene, which is probably when John DeLancey did something.
No, it was when he was
the doctor.
Yeah, he's the doctor. That's when he was inspecting her, he decides to go gloveless and be a perv. And it freaked me out because all I remember was going, oh my gosh, dude, that's Q. What are we doing? Q, what are you doing?
I just answer crusty.
Yeah.
I want to point out he's a good director. He directed LA Confidential, like you say, he directed Wonder Boys. Last week we were talking about surf movies. He directed my favorite surf movie, which is called Chasing Mavericks. I highly recommend that movie.
Is it a documentary or like a thing?
It's fiction. Hmm. It's a fictional film.
It's the last thing he directed, it looks like.
About a big wave surfer.
Yeah.
I just like seriously, man. Curtis Hanson is not bad. Like he puts together a really good movie here. It just the whole time I'm uncomfortable, and I don't feel like I'm uncomfortable like I'm watching a horror movie. I'm just uncomfortable like there's something about this movie that I don't ever need to see it again. Like it's not entertaining, so to speak.
By the way, that movie you're referring to, Chasing Mavericks, Gerard Butler plays a character named Frosty Henson.
Hessen.
Frosty Hessen. And has Elizabeth Shue in it. So if you're wondering where she's at, that was her in 2012. That's the last thing he did. He hasn't done anything else, Curtis Hanson, that is to say.
So I was trying to figure out where, if we had seen Mekhi Phifer anywhere before.
Oh, because he died last year. Sorry. Curtis Hanson died last year. Sorry.
Anyway, no, he didn't. Yeah. I mean, spreading rumors about Phifer dying. He didn't die. I was thinking, did we see that movie on Film Sack or did I watch that individually? It was a movie called Pandemic and it was like a first person.
No, we
thing. Did we watch that?
Saw that, didn't we?
It's the one with
Watch that one.
2016's Pandemic?
I think we did. That's the one where.
Okay, good. Okay, because I was trying to think. I was thinking maybe I saw it by myself.
No, we totally saw this. Okay, yeah. This is the one with Alfie Allen.
Yes,
right. From Game of Thrones in it. He was the truck driver kid. He was terrible.
Right. Okay, yeah. Good. Yep.
Good. We've seen so many movies, you guys. It's getting harder every time.
and we keep watching them. We keep watching movies that we don't sack. Like right. I'm getting to where I'm like, if anybody goes to the movie theater to see a movie, we have to do film sack on it. So I can just have that in my past.
I do that too. Right. Or I'll see a thing and go, did we see this on Film Sack? And then I think, right. No, we didn't. And then I like it. And then later we'll be on the show talking to him. I'm like, are you sure we didn't see that?
So and to be clear, Mickey Pfeiffer, I want to say we haven't seen Shaft, the Samuel Jackson Shaft.
No, we haven't.
Okay, we will eventually.
Well, I can't wait for you to say I've moved Shaft. I'm looking forward to that.
I've adjusted Shaft.
We haven't seen any of the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies either.
Oh my gosh, those are like.
We should get guilty pleasure.
Big I think time. Part two. I know what you did. What is it? I still know what you did last summer. Yeah. I think that's part two, and it's like it's trash, but I love it.
What's
and
the third one? I'm serious. Seriously, I'm not kidding. I really did know what you did last summer.
Right.
I have it written down right here what you did last summer.
I have photo proof.
I sent myself a text. I wouldn't forget what you did last summer.
I love that idea. Eminem is in.
Need to watch the Final Destination movies.
Yeah, we should do. They should be on a list of some sort. Eminem is in every single scene of the film. That is unusual. Usually, your main character is often not in every single shot. He is in every shot.
So that's a clear conscious decision that the movie is seen from his perspective only, and that makes it, you know, a surprise when he walks in on his new girlfriend with his best friend and this kind of thing.
Because at the same beforehand.
At the same time, I feel like I don't really get the world, like the terrible landscape around him. I don't really see much of it.
Yeah.
You know, I only see him in the bus and I don't like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That was rough.
By the way, Wink wasn't his best friend. Future was.
No,
come on.
Oh yeah. Freaking.
Cheddar Bob was his best friend.
Cheddar Bob was his
you're right. Future was his best friend.
Cheddar Bob was everyone's best friend.
You're right. You're right. The film very clearly makes the point that Future is the real best buddy. And it makes a point in the Sweet Home Alabama scene. But also, it makes you ask over and over, why does this guy keep coming back to Eminem as
he's
a friend?
Oh my gosh, it's terrible. And I'm like, oh, it's so one-sided. Every time he gets up and he's emceeing and he talks about, you know, how great my friend Bunny Rabbit is. B-Rabbit, get up here. And it's like, man, you're a little bit sided there, you know?
Even the last rap battle. He's on stage going, Rabbit, we need Rabbit. Somebody get Rabbit up here. And you're like, you feel so bad for Future. Like, come on. You are being ruined. Your reputation is being destroyed by this white kid.
Yeah.
It's definitely he likes you a lot more than you like him.
Yeah.
It's a one-way relationship there, my friend.
Did you pick up his ex-girlfriend, Janine, the actress who played him?
Oh, no. Who is that?
Who was that?
It's Pensatucky from Orange is the New Black.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. it totally is, dude. She's great.
She has the same voice, too, in
she
this
does.
Movie.
Yeah, that's how I recognize her. Meaning, like, wait a minute, that's freaking Pensatucky. Is this what landed Pensatucky in jail?
She's great, dude.
Oh, that's great.
I freaking love her.
I wonder if she ever made it to Bora Bora Bora.
My favorite, easily my favorite thing about Orange is the New Black is her. I think she's incredible.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah, really something else. Okay, well, that explains why I had this jolt of familiarity and then I forgot. Because she's barely in it is the other thing.
Yeah.
Like she was hardly in this
thing. Yeah, and it's almost weird how she's used. Like, you'd think that, again, just the fact that she shows up at his work is enough to cause him some work drama to where he's immediately afraid that he's going to get fired just because she shows up.
Yeah.
And you think that that's going to kind of pivot to something else. Like, all right, he goes and sees her apartment. He's given her the car for whatever reason. But you think that there's some sort of closure you're going to get with that as well, and you don't. You don't, maybe we don't need it, but I was expecting
it. Yeah, he definitely had no love interest by the end of this movie. It was just him walking away.
No,
walking
you're right. Because what happened to her? She was done.
She was going off to New York.
Yeah, going to New York where hopefully she can gain a higher level of hygiene knowledge. And then freaking. And then somebody else felt like a chick in the bucket here. And who am I thinking of?
I hate that we didn't have Michael Shannon come back again.
Yeah.
But the movie wraps every character's story pretty well. It doesn't leave somebody hanging and forget about them.
Yeah, you said rap. That's funny.
You said rap. And we're talking about rap. That's funny.
I think that's pretty good.
Are we thinking that, you know, just because he was beaten in that final rap battle that Papa Doc is just going to say, okay, well, Bunny Rabbit got the best of me. I guess we won't beat him up anymore.
Yeah, this is the end. This is the part where, because they don't show us that, I'm actually kind of glad, because either it goes one way or the other. Either they back off because they're like, now respect his mad skills, or they keep beating the shit out of him, which is probably the more likely thing. But that's why I like that it breaks from the Karate Kid thing. There's no need for blonde wiener kid to come over and go, hey, you're all right, buddy. You're all right. Like, I'll be your wingman anytime. Like, that stuff sucks in movies. Yeah. It's never viable. I mean, it doesn't suck. It's okay for what it is. But if I want to come away with this thing from feeling like, oh, man, Detroit.
Yeah, this movie's whole motivation was about being real and being honest.
It felt authentic.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That was his thing. And now it may feel silly to some people, but I felt like it was really trying to be honest, and that wouldn't have worked there.
If someone thinks it's silly, then I think they, like the rap battle stuff, you'd say to yourself, well, what's the difference between this and Step It Up or freaking the cheerleader one where they out cheer each other? Bring it on. I would say it's a huge difference. Like this is an actual thing. This is a thing that happens. It occurs, and it occurs famously in lots of stories and ways for lots of very successful and very respected hip hop artists. So to see behind the scenes like that, down on the dirty, gritty freaking warehouse level is kind of awesome.
Well, look, everybody loved it except for TV Guide magazine, where Maitland McDowell said, "What's most disappointing is the thoroughly cliched story." Shut up, TV Guide.
Yeah.
what are you doing reviewing a movie anyway?
Right. Yeah, what are you supposed to be talking about? Movie or TVs, you idiots. That's funny.
There were some things about the film that weren't perfect. Like Kim Basinger's Atlanta, Georgia accent was just way off for 8 Mile Detroit. Like, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, when you put it all together and you're white, which I am, It's fine. The movie's fine.
Get out.
Yeah. But also, not only that, you make a pretty good point there. I'm not here to say it's perfect. In fact, it did feel like a Rocky movie. In fact, it felt like Rocky 1, because in Rocky 1, he loses.
He doesn't win.
Yeah, and he just has to go back to Adrian, and they're going to be in their shit apartment drinking eggs in the morning, and it's just not going to be good.
Except he goes back to his mom.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and Stallone said he couldn't start the story with the white guy beating the black guy. Like, he just couldn't. He couldn't do that. You know, like, he was writing it in the 70s, and civil rights had just happened, as far as he was concerned. He just couldn't bring himself to do it,
sure.
So, like, this film is a lot later, but it still has the same problem. Mm-hmm. And so in order to have the white guy beat all the black guys, it has to first have the white guy just get the crap kicked out of him over and over and over. So it's kind of like Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 combined.
Well, when 9.5 weeks there, it's Kim Basinger goes on her drunk tirade and has real anger. And it's a really affecting anger. Like, she's very real to me. And in that moment, this is just how dumb my brain is. My brain went, what did Alec Baldwin do to you? You know what I mean?
Probably something bad. Like, I, you know, like, that's a real story, right? Like,
I felt like she was tapping into that. And it's only because I remember that in the news a lot in the early 2000s that those two were bumping heads.
I always think of her as being with John Larroquette. Was she ever with John Larroquette?
I don't know.
In the movie Blind Date. It was the one where when she gets drunk.
Okay. No, it's Blind Date. You're right. It's Blind Date.
Bruce Willis. It's Blind Date, right?
Yeah. Okay. Bruce Willis. I love Blind Date. Blind Date's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, don't get her drunk. Yeah. Don't feed her after midnight or she turns into a gremlin. It's a rules movie where the rule gets broken immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately.
All right.
I like Blind Date. You're making me want to watch Blind Date.
Oh, we've talked about it on the show before. Yeah. We've never had an opportunity. Yeah. We would love it.
Yeah.
With Kim Basinger's character again, what's the change that happens between the drunk tirade and, hey, I'm going to make you some pancakes. Can a woman make some pancakes for herself?
Oh, of course. Well, she won the bingo.
Well, she won bingo, but it was more than just a monetary. It was a personality change. It was a,
oh yeah,
you know what? I better do right by my son kind of thing, as opposed to, hey, I get some money. Now I'll be nice to my son.
Well, that's the whole, like, well, it's true, but it's just the whole thing, right? I mean, it till that point, she's powerless. She has no power. She has to leech off of her boyfriend. Now she has a little bit of power. And so she wants to pass on. I see this all the time. It happens a lot. I know a lot of people who live in trailers, whatever.
Well, this was a big trope, huge trope, right? Like she is forced to play the role of the movie alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as those tropes go, man, they're very rarely any good. That's hard business, mm-hmm. being movie alcoholic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I mean, as common as they are, it's hard.
But, right. You know, like sometimes it's Blazing Saddles and they get to have fun with it. But sure. This is a tough role, and I thought she did okay. Like I've known some functioning alcoholics. She was okay.
Right. Yeah, she's all right.
Like, the last alcoholic really we saw was an Electric Horseman, right? Is that the?
Oh, we have to have seen an alcoholic more recently than that.
Yeah, I feel like we get one every.
Point Break. Everybody was alcoholic in that movie.
But specifically, like,
I think that's more off screen.
Yeah. Somebody with a like specific drinking problem as a character thing is. Pretty common, though. I feel like almost every
What's
movie...
your favorite? Name a movie where there's a functioning alcoholic, so I'm ruling
Arthur,
out.
Arthur. Arthur.
Great, like almost the perfect example.
Yeah, you can't argue with Arthur.
It's less of a negative, though. Like a negative example for me would be like... I know. What's the one with the Indiana basketball and Gene Hackman? Hoosiers. And you got... What do you do? That guy, the freaking he had one eye in Waterworld. I can't think of his name.
Who's Hopper?
Dennis Hopper played the guy that kind of came back for a minute to be a coach. Got coaxed in there, and then when he had
almost every coach is an alcoholic.
Yeah, and when it came time for him to step up and really do it, because Gene Hackman was out for whatever reason, they fired him. He couldn't do it. He ended up just getting into a bottle and hiding somewhere. And the game was like, "Where's your coach? You have to forfeit." Like, I remember how bad that pissed me off, and still does. Dennis Hopper and Hoosiers, man.
A League of Their Own.
The worst one is Nicolas Cage in Leaving Las Vegas.
I haven't seen Leaving Las Vegas.
Functional alcoholic.
I should see that movie. I've never seen
it. Oh, I thought you'd seen that.
No, it's like one of the only. Well, this isn't Lost Highway, right? I've seen Lost Highway. You're talking about the one where he won like an Oscar for it.
Yes, exactly. He goes to Las Vegas basically to drink himself to death.
The Elizabeth Chu one.
Yes.
And then the one I always think of is the one where it's a comedy and he goes to Las Vegas and James Caan's there and he has to play Elvis and jump out of a plane. Yeah, Honeymoon in Vegas.
That's the prequel.
Right.
It's a bookended.
But so I always get those two confused, but I've never seen that Oscar one. And I don't know.
Funny because I thought you'd mention, you know, the stuff that happens to Elizabeth Shue in that movie.
No. Do you feel like that's a joyless film? Like, would I?
It is a very joyless film.
Hmm. Worth seeing, though, you'd say.
Very much worth seeing, but boy, it's one of those movies where I feel like at the end you'd take the DVD and throw it out into the snow.
Well, I've been known to do this. This has happened before.
So. Bringing up someone trying to drink themselves to death made me quickly check the website is rtlangalive.com because nice. I'm shocked that guy is still alive. It's weird that there is a famous living human who keeps trying to kill himself for decades with substances, and he's just still living.
Well,
God, he was so funny on Howard Stern as kind of Howard Stern's backup, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But boy, he was living it bad. Bad Santa's also a good functioning alcoholic.
Oh, I love that. I ended up I saw that.
Barely functioning.
I just saw that and loved it. I don't know if I talked about it here.
Yeah, you talked about it on TMS, I think.
Yeah, I loved it. I really liked Bad Santa, really like a lot.
Did you see part two yet?
No.
Don't.
Okay. Yeah, don't bother. Okay. Just
don't.
All right.
They shouldn't have made a second one.
Yeah. Is the first Bad movie Santa Reloaded, basically, or that's it?
No, it's not.
Oh, no, it would have been a great name for it, though.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Reloaded.
Yeah.
The kids all grown up and stuff. It's weird.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. It's because the first one is a complete story. It like has a beginning, middle, and end, and it wraps everything up. And the last thing you need is more of it. Like it's got everything it needs. It's like
Santa Claus 3, right?
It's like if I told you they were making another Elf, you'd be like, no, Christmas was saved. That's it. Like we have Elf in the can.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
I'll take your advice and hold off on, well, I don't want to see any Christmas themed movies at all right now, but I really like that first one. I thought
it was
great.
Did you unsubscribe to the Hallmark channel?
Back to their regular programming.
Yeah, they really have. And it's all just as bad, by the way. None of it's good. It's all terrible shows about dumb ideas. The Hallmark channel is garbage. It's bad.
By the way, my favorite alcoholic lately in movies is the Haymitch character in The Hunger Games. So what's that actor's name?
Oh, Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For some reason, I just felt every time I saw him, I felt like, oh, wow, he's actually drunk.
Yeah. He was a good drunk in what's the one where him and the guy from 310 to Yuma had to drive around and give people the death notices from the army? What was that called?
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
They were
he was drunk in 2012, wasn't he?
That too. He's a good drunk. He's a good drunk. I think he was even a little
more high in that one.
Sure. He was even a little drunk in that dragon movie with Christian Bale.
Oh, that was so good. We still haven't watched that either. We've been begging for Ring of Fire. Is it Ring of Fire?
Is it Ring? No, not Ring of Fire.
No, Rain of Fire. Rain of Fire. Yeah. Ring of Fire is the other one.
Ring of Fire is where you fight a giant Johnny Cash. Yeah, he's terrible mouth-breathing dragon.
Actually, that's Walk the Line.
Oh, yeah, it is Walk the Line.
Maybe we should get back to the movie.
I actually have another trope that kind of follows the whole alcoholic mom trope.
Oh, good, because here.
This all happened because dad disappeared. That's the trope.
They shouldn't have left. They shouldn't have left the question of the dad open for me, because it gave me way too much time to think of, you know, Kim Basinger was Vicki Vale and maybe Batman's his dad. And just, you know, it was just,
oh man,
don't leave it too open for me.
Watch 8 Mile again with the thought that it's the continuing stories of Vicki Vale.
So don't do that to me.
Bruce Wayne is a real deadbeat, dude. Jeez.
Right. Just give me this true story. Just give me the stuff.
Wow.
They're hiding because Batman doesn't want the kid to be killed. I mean, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
It's a really common trope because it gives you an explanation for whatever other than reality you're going to hang on a character, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, like, how do we explain all of this character's foibles and problems? Let's just make his dad disappear when he was a little kid. And that just does it for you.
Sure.
I think it's handled better in some films than others. This one, like Brian said, I really wanted to know more about the disappeared dad, and that's not what the trope should.
Well, maybe they
handled really well in Austin Powers.
Yeah, it was really good. But maybe this is a case where they're trying to avoid it being so much of a trope, or at least spending time on it. Like, the assumption is he's gone. We're already here. There's no need to explain it.
I'm sure a lot of people are probably going to relate and like, oh yeah, my dad just disappeared. I don't even know who he is. I don't even remember my dad. I mean, sure. I'm sure people related to it.
I always feel so bad for anybody who had that happen. It sucks.
Right.
Nobody should have to go through that. That's my statement on this. Hey, check this out. There's no way in hell that you work at a radio station.
Don't.
And
I can't. I have no peripheral.
In your freaking producer room right next door to you with a giant window where normally he's pointing at you for cues and everything else, that you're not seeing two people doing it in broad daylight in the middle of your interview.
All right. As a podcaster, don't we have the ability, though, to tune out the kids walking through our studio and our wives coming down to, like, you know, to grab something off our desk or something out of the printer or something like that while we're recording a show?
Maybe.
I have a feeling that my peripheral is just like,
I'm interviewing Big Papa here. I got to, you know, I've got to.
Big O.
Yeah, Big O. Big O. Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's the other thing. Big O. I assume that's a riff on like Biggie Smalls, like
heir to the tire fortune. Yes.
Yeah. Right. We got these tires and they're all fitting good. Where'd the lug nuts go? I don't know. That's bad. There's my rap. You like that? It was pretty good.
No.
That was very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Give me a second next time to get lay down some funky beats behind it.
It's definitely going to happen. You guys all proved to have greater prowess at that than I would ever attempt. Seriously, I would be the worst. The worst possible, but
you'll notice I did not rap in my intro.
No, you didn't. You did like I would have done is what you did.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there's a very specific thing that Eminem does with his raps that not a lot of other rappers do, which is instead of each line being kind of the same line and kind of that AABB or ABAB or, you know, anything like that. And you know, all right, some of the more high profile rappers don't do this, but he does this thing where it's like he finds a, a couplet, a rhyming couplet, and then he like throws out a bunch of words that all rhyme with that and kind of finishes that, but then takes the last one and winds it into a new sentence that has a new rhyming couplet at the end of it. Yeah. And then a bunch of rhymes of that one. And
yeah. It's, really it's like, fantastic. I don't think I can stay. I think my mom might be gay. There's a tree in the way. And then at the end, it's back to the word that he was supposed to rhyme
right,
like
exactly.
10 minutes ago.
And it's, yeah. It's a really clever and really compelling way to rap where it's, you know, you're like, oh, well, what's he going to rhyme? Oh, he's going this direction now. And now, oh, now he's rhyming that word.
I would like the world to know my best rap I ever laid down was just, my mom just might be gay and there might be a tree in the way. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I wrote several rhymes. I took out my piece of paper and got on the bus and yeah. wrote several rhymes and felt like it was just, it didn't feel genuine or honest for me to rap. So I did sure. not, but I did start going, huh, everything rhymes with going. The O-I-N-G is like, there's so many words that go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just went, and I'm like, what a cheat. Yeah, and so now I don't like that. I don't like when people rhyme the word going or anything else.
Well, because I mean, you've got the O-W-I-N-G stuff that rhymes yeah, with yeah. it. You've got the O-E-I-N-G stuff that rhymes with it.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
I mean, look, well done, Eminem and all the other rap artists out there who've done great rhymes, but you'll never beat And the Chicken Tastes Like Wood, ever.
Well, and you'll never beat Informer by Snow.
I've just been sitting here. I've just been sitting here trying to conjure up Scott Johnson's rapper name.
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, okay, so there's four things that you have to avoid, like because they've been overused. There's MC something, Ice something, Big something, and Lil something. Those are out of the question.
Yeah,
Lil also, you have very to avoid popular right now.
The first initial last word rhymes with easy, like
right. Scott Jeezy.
S-Jeezy. Yes, yeah. S-Jeezy.
Yeah, that kind of
his.
Thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just found a rap generator, and if I put in Scott, it says my name is Scotty Cuts with a K.
Oh, that's not bad.
Is
you
it?
Only have to put in your first name for that?
That's what it says. So, Brian, you both get this one. It says, Rappa B. Bry, a.k.a. Scammer Trip.
Wow.
Well, it's good because there's two of us. One of us can use the pre-AKA. The after.
Randy, you, according to this website at myrapname.com, is... Randy Trigger, a.k.a. Tenacious Bash.
Wow, Tenacious Bash. That's embarrassing.
Mine's Blame is what mine is. Mine's short. You guys all have these cool things. Oh, here you go. Okay, if I put Johnson, Gunshot Johnson, J, a.k.a. Shady Wrath. This is great.
So apparently it just randomly picks stuff because I did Randy again, and I got Smooth Randy Big Assassin.
Nice.
So. I love it.
If you put in your last initial, it'll do something different. I got Bry IPAC.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Well, what's Dunaway do just for fun?
Wow.
Sharpie D Sharp.
Oh, I love it. Sharpie D Sharp. Oh, that's fantastic.
Sharpie D Sharp.
That is the best.
And this
one
is the only reason
them.
Why I want to be a rapper, just so I can get a cool rap.
Yeah, name. Heck yeah, dude.
Yeah. So.
This, by the way, they have a connected GoDaddy link that automatically says, would you like to register nice. SharpieDSharp.com?
Yes, I would.
That's SharpieDSharp.com.
Talk about a turning point.
Yeah, this is a website that is currently... Oh, someone's squatting it. Someone actually owns it.
Oh,
Sharpie D Sharp is currently being squatted?
Yeah, it's being squatted. I know. I tell you, this is the internet.
You might
now.
Have to get sharpiedsharp.biz.
Yeah. This is amazing. It's amazing. All right. Well, on that note, I believe we could do some clips about this movie.
Sure.
They are plentiful. I'll just say
How
that.
How much bleeping did you have to do for these?
A few. I did have to bleep a few. We'll start with this one, which is, I don't know even who said this, but here it is.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby.
Who was that? Was that him talking to his sister? I think it was.
No, try it again. Give me again.
Yeah, I'm sorry, baby.
I think he's talking to his sister.
Yeah, well, he's coming.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah.
He came home and swore somebody did something bad, and he was like, oh, shoot. She saw it again. She saw another horrible thing that's going to ruin her life.
Right.
Here's when I think of people at Walmart, here's what I think of.
Ain't nobody down there but a bunch of clowns who ain't got deals and never going to get deals.
There you go. See, I made fun of Walmart people there is what I did. How about this one? Big O is like Biggie.
Big O got himself a deal, and it's all because of me.
Roy paid for Big O's demo.
I can't stand the name Big O. They shouldn't have done it.
Yeah, right.
Ugh, that's my biggest
but
complaint
you, but
about
you
the
like
film.
Wink.
Wink's all right.
Midas.
Nampa Auto Parts. Here's a funny line about bingo.
Yo, that dude is practically living with my f***ing mom, dog. They met at bingo.
They met at bingo.
Bingo is like a central location for white people in the trailer park.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She answers everything.
She won $3,200.
It really turned around for them because I'll tell you, I mean, there's always promises. Okay, look, I live in the South and there's a lot of trailer parks around where I live. And so I know people live there.
Yeah.
And it is not uncommon to know somebody who is literally doing nothing every day because they're waiting on a settlement. Mm. This rang very true for me. And so I was like, but all the bingo stuff, I don't know anyone who goes to bingo. And anyone who resolves their life issues with bingo, I don't know that.
I know a guy who has plenty of money, great job, doesn't want for anything, but decided to get a trailer because they're so cheap. And paid it off immediately, owns it, lives there. It's nice inside.
Can anyone really own a trailer? I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. You can own your own trailer. I mean, you pay lot fees, right? I think
you feel like a trailer is like a stallion. Wild, right. You know.
You own a trailer, I mean.
Believe me, if I was allowed anywhere in Orange County to live in a trailer, I wouldn't a minute, because it's the only thing I could possibly afford out here.
That's a good point. Yeah. Like in some places, that's where you live. And I try not to let the trailer park stereotype seep too into my blood, because I know too many people who are just fine. They just happen to be where they live.
There's a wide brush of trailer parks. I mean, there's upscale trailer parks. And then there's places like was in this movie.
Yeah, not all Raising Arizona, but everyone thinks it is. Sometimes it's like retirement communities. There's one near us here that's a bunch of really nice old people sitting on their lawns.
And very little difference between a trailer these days and tiny houses, which are the modular kind of like home the new popular kind of thing.
Yeah, that and townhomes, or I mean, what's a townhome? It's just a stacked higher trailer that's nice and costs too much.
Permanently in one location.
Yeah,
are we over the tiny houses hipster trend at this point?
Oh, the little.
As long as the TV show Life in Pieces is on, I think tiny houses.
I kind of like them. I think they're kind of cool. I don't know if I want to live in one.
If it was just me, sure.
If it's by yourself.
Rolling a tiny studio into my backyard.
Yeah. See, that's not a bad idea either. But I've seen, you know, like I watched that minimalist documentary on Netflix, and there were some cool ideas in there. Like some rad little houses that cost nothing. And, you know, if you're a single dude or a couple who's happy to be hippies together and whatever, I could see it. It'd be all right. Here's some singing it.
Well, Jimmy moved in with his mother. Because he ain't got no place to go.
Now, that gets better.
Right.
Because then these lines happen.
Happy birthday, Rabbit.
Happy birthday, Rabbit.
Happy birthday, Rabbit.
I love that.
Pfeiffer did not get that role for being able to rap.
No. No, he did not. No.
Oh, Pfeiffer. But he is the best thing in the movie, in my opinion.
It's pretty great. It's pretty great. Those dreads are sweet. Here's another singing.
Here's a brand new car. You can have it.
All right. Here's Michael Shannon laughing. Michael Shannon is a man. I like him in everything, but here is the worst laugh ever. So stupid.
I can't decide whether I love or hate him, because he comes through the character really works. Like it's horrible. Like I want that guy out.
Yeah.
No, he's but good. I can't Michael decide Shannon's whether that means Michael Shannon's good or not. I don't know.
Well, Neil before Zod. Here's Cheddar doing the best thing Cheddar knows how to do.
I get claustrophobic.
Okay, there's that. How about this one? Oh, they said the name of the movie, so here it is.
You need to take that white-ass rap shit of yours back across 8 Mile.
8 Mile, like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You guys
love
got
it when they there. Say it.
Yeah, it's a movie there. Tell Cheddar to do what?
Shut up, Cheddar.
Shut up, Cheddar. All right, that's good. Here's a weird Eminem sound I couldn't explain.
Life.
What happened? That's it?
Life.
Weird.
Life.
Isn't he just saying life?
Life. Life. Life.
I don't know. I don't know why. Something about it jumped out. I captured it. I don't remember why, but that's it. Here's the worst line in the movie.
Greg won't go down on me.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell anyone
Michelle
that.
Pfeiffer.
Don't tell.
Come on, Vicky Vale.
Yeah, don't tell. Don't tell your son that.
Dana, why don't we hear it, Mom? La 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 la.
Exactly.
I wrote this was ludicrous, but it's not ludicrous.
Exhibit?
It's Exhibit. Why did I put Ludacris? I've screwed up my rapper names.
Because you're Ludacris.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, here's Exhibit.
You need to get your food and take your ass back to work.
All right. There's a little rapping.
He's so good in this movie. Like, I we were talking about it a long, not a long, recently, but like many weeks ago, we were talking about where an artist basically appears as themselves in a film and performs.
Yeah.
And this was my favorite.
Being in X-Files, the movie?
Remember that?
He was an agent. Loved it.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
That's pretty interesting.
Do you remember the movie? No. Did you go see the movie?
No.
I did. I saw all of them.
Oh, wait. Was he in a...
Future and...
Right.
What was the other
Maybe
one?
It was an episode that I'm thinking of.
Could have been an episode.
It wasn't the movie.
Did you also capture some of Ms. Corona's rap right there?
No.
She was good. She was really good.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah, Ms. Corona is the rapper.
She's a real rapper.
Yeah,
she was great. Yeah, I liked her a lot in that line. The food line was great. I liked that whole scene. I'm trying to find a quick thing about, because I thought Ludacris was in the, or not Ludacris, Exhibit was in the, it was in the news for being in trouble for doing something terrible, and I can't find it.
I don't want to know.
It's just everybody. We're at that point where it's everybody.
Yeah, it is kind of everybody.
I like him now, so just stop right there.
All right, no more. Okay, the big guy, he says this.
We're talking Bentleys and Benjamins, not Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
That made me laugh. I like that.
The big guy, a.k.a. Was it Omar Benson?
Was it Omar?
Is it him and his... he was supposed to be playing opposite of a brother he had in that. That was all...
Sure. You know. He's good in lots of stuff. Lots of other movies. He's a big, giant fellow, too. Okay, here's a great line. Mid-film? I guess from the middle of the film?
We need to get fine bitches and fat rides. No, what we need to do is put our money in savings bonds. No, what we need to do is get our songs on JLB. Man, shut the f*** up. All of us never do shit about nothing. We're still broke as f*** and live at home with our moms.
Damn.
We have this discussion every week on FilmSack.
Yeah.
We need to be watching Catwoman. No, we need to be watching Point Break.
Yeah.
Shut up. We live at home with our moms.
Yeah.
Can I get a Trump alert?
Yeah, if you want one. Hold on. Here you go.
The gang has a nerd.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Of course, the nerd is constantly reminding everybody of what he just read and what they need to be paying attention to with politics.
Yep.
That was a little annoying because it just felt so. It felt like we need one more person here. What trope shall we use?
Well, I'm glad they had somebody with some sense, though, because everybody else is stupid.
Sure.
You don't be shooting. paintball guns at cop cars without, you know, you don't burn a house down. Like, come on, you guys, listen to the nerd. He's got good ideas. He knows what's up.
I agree with you on that point, but I'm like, what's he doing in this movie? He's just filling a trope role. That's all his point is.
It's a little
look at
like,
you in your trope role.
It's like Stranger Things or, you know, old, like E.T. You got to have the whole crew, man. You got to have everybody.
Exhibit made me remember. I want to speak to the IMDb Pro users in our audience. Listen, when you go to an IMDb page for someone like Exhibit, and there's a big known for area, and that doesn't include Pimp My Ride, there is something wrong.
Yeah.
He is known for one thing a lot, and then other stuff that he has intersected with.
This isn't our first movie with him either, is it? We've had others. I can't think of what at the moment. If only mostsacked.com was still up.
I know.
Miss it.
But he's exhibits in other stuff that we've seen recently-ish.
Sure. XXX?
XXX, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yep. XXX, that's what I'm thinking of.
I can't. It just bugs me. Like, Exhibit, known for X-Files, 8 Mile, Bad Lieutenant, Gridiron Gang. No, that is not what Exhibit is known for. He made himself very famous in Pimp My Ride.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't even have to be a pro user to change some of that stuff. Like, I can go change certain things, and I'm just a wiener.
Okay.
Is that badge on IMDb?
I'm on IMDb I'm in there for a single credit on IMDb, and it's for...
Redshirt Diaries.
No. Am I for that? Oh, maybe it's two now.
Should be.
Might be two now. The one I thought it was that WoW documentary, the Waste World First thing.
Waste World First.
But I didn't know if I was on that other thing or not. Am I? I might be. You would be
that's
too
what,
then.
That's what my, yeah, that's what my loan credit is for.
Oh, we should look, hold on. Just for fun here. Okay, Ibbit, Ibbit, Ibbit.
There's like three of me on there.
Three of Brian Ibbits?
Yeah.
This is riveting, guys. Oh my gosh.
Right. I know. Brian
Ibbits. We should look it up.
Hold on.
My Night Attack appearance, my Redshirt Diaries appearance, and then I don't know what this first one is.
Oh, yeah. You got three of them.
Brian Ibbit 1.
Oh, that's crazy.
There's Brian Ibbit 1, Brian Ibbit 2, and Brian Ibbit 3, but really they're all.
I'll bet I'm on the Redshirt Diaries.
Hey, pro users, could you merge that for me?
Season 2.
Could you get in there and fix that for me, please? Thanks.
Appreciate. Oh, that's great. I am on there. All right. Well, anyway, whatever. It's a strange place, that IMDb. And apparently you and I were both, supposedly Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone almost got the roles we got as well, according to
apparently, exactly.
Yeah, and if you ever get a second chance, remember.
Ethan Hawke was also considered for the role of Klingon person in Redshirt Diaries.
I'm pretty sure my bio is still the ripped off one from Steven Seagal. Right. I think it's still Steven Seagal thing. That's so good. Anyway, the point is there's no exact science over there and everybody can jack it up. All right. Where was I? I had one or two of these left to play. How about this rapper man stuff?
For sure, man. I'm doing it. I'm doing it for y'all, man. This is for Detroit. 313, baby. Love.
Love, baby. Love. Love.
Thanks, Big O. Yeah. You're the best.
Thanks, Big O.
Hey, look,
tires.
Look to your left. People are doing it.
That very white girl is doing it in there. She's very white.
She's very white.
I liked her a lot. I'm sad that she died, yeah. And that sucked. That was lame. Yeah.
And it was such a sad way to die. Like, wasn't it black mold in their house or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he died shortly after, too, her.
And they were in there, like, she was like 32 or some dumb young age?
Yeah, she was 32 when she died. Mm-hmm. And that was 8 years ago.
That's gross. Wow. It's not right. She was King of the Hill. She played
Luann.
She was fantastic in that. And she was
Clueless.
Good.
She was great.
Yeah, Clueless and other things. She's great.
Like this excludes you from dying. Yeah. You ran great rules. You can't die.
But you were in King of the Hill. You can't die.
Yeah, they're not allowed to die. She wasn't she in the first Sin City? She had something in there.
No, I think that's right. Was she?
I think so.
Oh, wait a minute. I think you might be right. Let me think. I'm starting to see.
Jessica Alba. I remember. Oh, yeah, she was. Shell.
Okay.
Tried really hard to put that movie out of my memory.
Really?
No, don't do that.
Oh, really? The first one I thought was great.
You yellow bastard. Just kidding. Get it? Because it had a yellow, old yellow bastard.
There's apparently a documentary about the death of Brittany Murphy.
Oh.
I'm not surprised.
Well, that'll depress me.
I would like to see what all... Yeah. Went down.
Is that
around,
like on? Is an actual related documentary? Is like an episode? Wasn't there like something on Netflix where Die Too Young with Heath Ledger? I saw that one.
Oh yeah, I think she is in that. I don't know if this is the same thing Randy's talking about, but she is in that.
I would like to understand how she and Simon Monjak died, or if we actually know was the final.
There's a lot of conspiracies about it too, because there always is. But I think the official L.A. coroner stuff was. It was either black mold or some kind of carbon monoxide leak or something in the house. Something like that. It's awful. It's freaking awful. Get that stuff checked, everybody.
This biography is crazy.
Which one?
Well, she died. I'll have you know, if you're in IMDb and you die relatively young, suddenly your biography gets enormous.
Well, somebody, neither Brittany nor Simon were given a thorough and complete forensic autopsy for poisons. Brittany's father, Angelo A.J. Berlotti, is pursuing the investigation of the true reasons behind Brittany's and Simon's sudden demise, as he believes the two were murdered. Like, it's almost like it's written by
a conspiracy theorist.
Conspiracy theory, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Well, like I said, you can make me look like Steven Seagal, so why not? Which is not a compliment, by the way, for the record, but it does make me laugh. So there it is. So it stands. Okay. That was good. Let's dive into this thing here, which is a thing I can't click on. Why? Okay. All the skull caps in the entirety of Detroit were used in the filming of this movie. Mm-hmm. Correct. Check. The film sack checklist continues with really baggy sweatpants. Check. Man, those were baggy sweatpants.
So many layers. If you live in Detroit, apparently you dress in lots of layers.
Yeah. One of those layers had mom's spaghetti. Check. All right. Trek stuff. Star Trek connections. We only have one. Abdul Salam El Razak played Joe Lee Patton. I don't know who that is in the movie. Joe Lee Patton.
One of the people.
And TNG played a bass player in the Bourbon Street bar simulation for the episode 11001001.
And he's got my favorite photo in IMDb of the week.
Oh, very nice.
I gotta look.
He's an old guy. He's in this movie. He was like 60-ish. He's now over 70.
You know
he's probably one of the guys in the stamping facility.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The stamping guy.
Okay, yeah. I think that's who he was.
Yep.
Up.
Down. I like a good IMDb photo where you can't really see most of it.
Oh wow.
I know this guy.
That's a good one. I like that one.
I don't know what he actually looks like because that photo isn't telling.
He's still working. Not a ton, but working. He's doing stuff. Got things going on. All right. I'd give the soundtrack grade a R for rappy as hell. There's lots of rap. Actually, speaking of Biggie Smalls and that kind of stuff, they had that in the car a lot, and he had all kinds of real rap going on. And I do think Eminem's song at the end there, that, what's it called?
Lose Yourself
is really good.
Yeah, it is good. And I didn't realize until watching this that it mentions Mickey Pfeiffer, doesn't it?
Oh, does it?
There's several versions of that song. The version we heard at the very end of the movie is not what I was used to hearing on the radio.
Interesting.
Okay. They also, how did you listen to the whole thing? Because stupid Netflix every time.
What?
It's like
there ought to be a setting. Netflix.
Yeah.
Setting. I want to turn that off.
Yeah, there it is. Life for my family, because man, these damn food stamps don't buy diapers, and it's no movie. There's no Mickey Pfeiffer. This is my life, and times are so hard. I think the regular version, the single version, has that line in it.
Hmm. Who's now? Wait. Oh, okay. Now I get it. Mickey Pfeiffer. Yeah.
Yep.
So he calls him out in it. That's crazy.
Name checks him. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Well, that's what rappers do. They name check.
They do. Yes.
They don't price check, though. They don't go, can I get a, this? They don't do that.
They don't. Yeah, it's surprising that they don't.
No. I kind of wish they'd do more price checking in their raps. Soundtrack. Oh, I already did that. Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 100 characters. I can't even read. Sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy Jordan.
8 Mile explores the societal repercussions of being an encroaching white in a predominantly black culture and what a white man's success therein means for the hegemony of rap and hip hop. I'm just kidding. It's all a fever dream that follows Eminem's PTSD from seeing his mom having sex.
Oh, yeah, dude. Me too. Do you think that was really her or body double? I couldn't tell. Was that her?
She turns her head and it's Kim Basinger.
She turns her head. Look at it.
Did she? Because to me, it looked like there was a shot. There was a cut. I could be wrong.
Maybe she's like, maybe, you know, she's got her head sticking out of a sweater, like in Vince Melissa's body is in the other direction. And it's just, this is totally my body.
She's like the Borg queen. Her little neck and head come out. All right. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Keeping in with sex here. Let's go. 8 Mile, like kneeling before Zod, even though he won't return the favor.
Oh, geez. Well done.
Oh, you'll get there.
That's awesome.
Right. If it got there.
Oh.
That was really funny. By the way, this movie, not for kids. Just a thing to say out loud.
Do we have to tell people that?
Well, I feel like we haven't really said, and never hurts. I had somebody on Twitter say, hey, is this appropriate for my 11-year-old? And I'm going to say no.
Oh, yeah, no, so we're asking about Bright.
Oh, that was Bright. And I would also say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's too much boobies and killing and effing in that thing.
Yeah, there's nudity in Bright, isn't there, if I remember
correctly? Oh, yeah. There's a bar scene with lots of boobies.
Right, a strip club, sure.
But even if that's not your thing, it's really violent. And if that's not your thing, it's really F-bomby. And if that's not your thing, well, I guess take your 11-year-old. But one of those three things should probably stop you.
Right.
It's pretty gnarly.
It's, you know, so the scene in the film that I remembered from the other time I've seen it that really stuck with me, and other people have said that, you know, it really kind of like scarred them, is when Eminem's getting the crap kicked out of him, his little sister, who's like 5 years old, is inside the trailer looking out the window screaming, you know, because she's seeing the worst thing she's ever seen, and it's just terrifying. And the way it's depicted is just crazy. It's really haunting, really fearful.
Yeah, heart-wrenching. I hated it. Yeah, that girl really put in a performance too. It almost felt like she was really screaming and crying and worried about somebody. It really bothered me.
Yeah, so I guess that makes it a good movie because it's effective.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have to see that again.
I don't either. Right, that's rough, right. Man. It's rough stuff. Real talk, man. Bro, yo, yeah. Dog. Okay.
Hey, I should do my Twitter post.
Yeah, let's get back down to this. It's Brian Ibbett.
8 Mile on a scale of 1 mile to 13 mile.
Wow. Well done.
That was great. Thank you.
Well done. Man, we're getting, that was high minded. Like, I feel like we're not normally this good. That was really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done. All right. I've been just handed this. This is, according to this card that I was just handed, this is the alternate titles. These almost were the title of the film. It's crazy. Here's the first one. Cheddar is better. I agree. Yeah. That can be good. That's two meetings. He's cool. He's a good friend. And he's feeling better after he shot himself.
Oh, yeah.
Second one was Who Framed Jimmy Rabbit? And, oh, okay. That's it. There. We're moving on from that terrible idea. Emails. We got one from Tracy Tidwell. These are emails that come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. And Tracy says this. Hello, gents. Love the show. Was listening to the Gremlins episode and was pleasantly surprised to hear my hometown, Jasper, Alabama, mentioned by Scott in reference to Pauly Holiday. I'd actually forgotten that when I watched Gremlins. I wanted to add Jasper is only one of two major cities in Walker County, a former mining area, and that is actually home to George Goober Lindsay, who just died, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, no, it was Jim Nabors.
Oh, Jim Nabors. Died. I always forget which Goober or Gomer that died. with whom my grandfather played junior college football with. Michael Rooker was born near there in a town creatively called Townley. Heavyweight fighter Butterbean and Tallulah Bankhead also hail from the Jasper area. Keep on sacking. I love listening to you guys on my way to work and around the town. I moved from Jasper. I am not an actor and I am not famous. Tracy Tidwell. That's great. I always like to hear Bankhead,
one of the greatest names ever.
Sure. I always like to hear when people got something cool from their hometown, like a, you know, an actor from there or something like that. And Michael Rooker's cool, man. That guy's badass.
He's badass.
I wonder if he ever comes back to visit Townley. Maybe not so much. If you'd like to send your own emails into the show, you can. It's filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is, now wait for this, The Room.
Nope. No.
The Room.
Putting some air quotes around the word movie.
Yeah. Mm. But it's, I mean, think of it. This is our golden chalice. This is
it's our great white whale.
Yeah. Isn't it?
I feel like it is.
I feel like it is. I mean, we've said that about Point Break. We've said it about Troll 2. Like,
if The Room had like high profile actors like Nicolas Cage or Christopher Walken or something like that, I feel like it would be our holy grail.
I mean, Troll 2 didn't.
It's our mini-boss on the way to the Holy Grail.
This is a tough one, though. It's going to... Do not stand in the poop of this one.
No.
The Room... So here's the deal. The Room was showing or is showing still? Is it still showing?
January 10th. There's a special event thing. One night screening, January 10th at a lot of theaters across the U.S. And you can just go search for The Room or go to your Fandango or whatever there.
Yeah.
So... January 10th, which is Wednesday, it's going to be showing. Now, it's also, I think, on YouTube, so you can find it there. But by golly, be like me and go see it in a theater with a bunch of people that you're going to have to awkwardly walk out of the theater with afterwards once it's all over.
Yeah, and you'll tell us all why that is next week when we've all seen this hideous garbage fire.
We'll know why it is.
So it's supposed to be the best worst movie of all time. That's what people say. Now, there's also this added freak out because what's his name's made a movie about it called The Disaster Artist, and that's out now, and that's up possibly up for awards and other things. James Franco. So there's a lot of hubbub about it right now. So we think, you know what, perfect time for us to ingest this thing. I am fully expecting this to be nowhere nearly as good bad as everybody says. I think we've been oversold this thing. So
there's no way it can live up to the bad hype. Like, it's going to be bad, and it's not going to be so bad. It's funny.
Yeah.
Except probably
it's
going to
be bad.
I think anytime Tommy Wiseau's on screen, I think it's going to be funny because he's so bad.
Because he's the worst. Exactly. So I'm very excited about this. and so much more. That'll be next week right here on the show.
Yeah, and don't forget, there are plenty of whales in the ocean. Like, what, one of these days, we'll we'll hit episode 500 and we'll watch something like Geely or Showgirls or Super Babies. There's like The Last Airbender. There's a lot of whales in this ocean. We're gonna continue to occasionally dive down and find a movie like From Justin to Kelly, and the room is not like this one time only ridiculousness.
We got a whole ocean to kill is what we're gonna do. One movie at a time. All right, well, thank you all for listening and being here. FilmSack is very much looking forward to a productive 2018 with many great films coming up. We'll start with The Room next and we'll go from there. FilmSack.com is the website. You can leave us emails at FilmSack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at FilmSack. And please, if you've never done it before, do it now. Go wherever you get your podcast, whatever service you use, and leave us reviews. It helps us in great big ways. Be that Google Play or even a little like on YouTube if that's how you're watching this. However you're getting it, just leave us a nice little thumbs up of a sort. And that's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Yo.
Scared him. Yo.
Yo.
Nothing wrong. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
And we've done it.
Life.